So I'm going to talk to you today about something that I'm not involved in anymore. And from that perspective, I actually have some observations that I want to share at the very end, because I think they may have some relevance for some of the people up here. And they certainly have taught me a great deal, but prepared me for new opportunities as well. Well, you might recognize one individual in this photograph, and she's out in the audience right there. That's Yolanda, and she was part of our early development of this project, but it started with a phone call. I had done research, primarily R01 type level research, not much community involvement at all, for many years in the Yakima Valley, looking primarily at pesticide health effects. But Martin Yanez, the individual there on the right, gave me a call. He was an organizer in the Yakima Valley, where he worked at KDNA Radio and CEC, the Northwest Community Education Center. And he was focusing on environment. They were interested in taking on environment, no specific topic in mind, but just sort of generally environment. He was in charge of their environmental office. He gave me a call because he was the first one to see the RFA come out that led to Proyecto Bienestar. We started putting it together. We put some team together, four different partners, and some of those people are shown in this picture here, and we'll come back to that picture later, and I'll tell you why I'm going to use that again. The one thing I want to say about this project is it was one of the most interesting experiments in research that I've ever been involved in, because we started without a question. We started instead with a community group and a community partnership with the university, a medical center, and a small minority-serving college, with an interest in figuring out what was the problem. And it's a rare opportunity that you'll ever have as a researcher to have that kind of freedom to ask those kinds of questions. And I really am grateful to NIEHS for having the courage to put an RFA out that we could respond to, saying, we want to find out what the problem is. And we did that, and I really appreciated that. We all very much appreciated that. But what we wanted to develop, first identify environmental and occupational health issues, develop an action plan to start to address those, and develop a sustainable partnership. Those were our goals. We took about a year and a half to develop a name, and we finally came on Proyecto Bienestar, which means the well-being project. In the first 5 years, we spent the entire time trying to figure out what's important to this community and how are we going to prioritize that. But since that time, we've been relatively successful in obtaining other grants that directly relate to several of the priorities that the community identified. We've gotten an R21 from NIEHS, which focuses now on asthma, and that's ongoing at the present time. We received an EPA Care 1 grant and applied for a Care 2, didn't get it, but finished high on the list of competition. We did a Community Knowledge of Science grant, NIH Partners in Research Project, and have just finished that and unfortunately didn't get the funding for the Care 2. We're still working on trying to develop new projects based on the problems that we identified. This is more or less the structure. We had a core group which consisted of four partner organizations. Some of the things we did that were a little unusual is we used consensus decision making, which was very uncomfortable for a lot of people at first. We got used to it, but and at first it was very slow, but over time actually we improved the process because we started to understand it better. We had educators and various other resources that sort of prompted our process. We had the fiscal responsibility was the responsibility of the core group specifically, and we were responsible for communicating and guiding the process in sort of the business end of the project. The Community Advisory Board, which had about 13 members, although the membership fluctuated, gave us global direction. We used also a consensus model in that group, and in the first year, we discussed what we knew about what was going on in the Yakima Valley and agricultural workers, and then moved off from there. They reviewed recommendations on virtually every decision we made, which was very interesting. And then finally, after we'd collected some information, we went back to the community for community forum to have their input in the process. So what we did was we used three different sources of information to gather data. We had CAB key informant interviews as we formed the CAB. We were doing key informant interviews from them. We used key informants of offshoots of them. They identified important people in the community who could give us information about the issues. And then we did a survey using a student group who was associated with a minority-serving institution that we were participating with, and they did the community surveys. They were the students referred to as the Connect students, which was a project run by the Yakima Valley Farmworkers Clinic, which was our clinical partner. After that, after we had this group together, or with this data gathered together, we put those items, the issues that people had raised, into a list that could be voted upon with the guidance of someone at individual tables. A lot of the people who were voting were illiterate. There were Hispanic farm workers, many of whom had sixth grade educations, many of whom couldn't read, and many of whom spoke only Spanish. And so all our meetings were conducted in Spanish. We had a town hall style meeting, and during which we had an open microphone to add new issues to the list that had not been identified. We added about three new issues, none of which ended up on the high priority list. But so we were actually pretty gratified by the fact that what we had found was probably a near complete list. But in the end, the town hall voting process, which was a sort of a nominative process, identified pesticides, workplace illnesses, workplace injuries, and abusive workplaces as the four key issues that this community was concerned about. We then brought it back to the CAB for endorsement and potentially reprioritization. They endorsed completely the community prioritization, and so we moved off with that list as it was. In terms of the things that I feel we achieved in this process, or things that were unique about this process, was first the youth engagement. We used high school to college transitioning students who were almost exclusively Hispanic. We had a few folks who were migrants from other countries. I think we had a Russian and potentially a Romanian in the group, but most of the time they were Hispanics. And we trained them in survey techniques, had them help us design the questionnaires around the topics, and went out and did the surveys with them. That had certain limitations. We couldn't go house to house because the community group thought that would be too risky with young students to be going door to door, so we didn't do that. We did it in more public forums, which was somewhat of a limitation, but I think we got some reasonable data. Spanish language was a focus of everything we did. We early on decided that all our meetings would be held in Spanish. So we had a translator for all the meetings that we needed translators for. It wasn't always necessary, but anybody who spoke English had to work through a translator. We shared resources 50-50 right down the middle. The community got 50%, the university got 50%. Leadership was clearly shared in the CAB and with the CAB and the core. And subsequently, we've made several successful grant applications, and we intended and I think successfully included the broader Yakima community in the process. The challenges, I think, were first building trust. It took us a long time to get moving. It took us a tremendous amount of time to even decide what our logo was going to look like. I mean, it just was a very, very contentious process, I'd have to say. Everybody wanted everything in it, and it sort of turned out like a camel a little bit, sort of an animal designed by a committee. Building trust, the community was quite frustrated with that slowness of action. We heard back from the community periodically that they were expecting a lot more, a lot faster. The process, the consensus was new to most people and a little bit challenging. The four institutions had to learn how to meet each other on common ground. One was a clinical organization that was providing clinical care to farm workers, but also very dependent on the grower community. They were very involved with the grower community, received a lot of support from them, so we're cautious about going anywhere that would be problematic. The university, the small university we worked with, it was a college when we started, became a university in the process, was also somewhat cautious about its position in the community. The community organization, KDNA, was not at all hesitant to say, you know, to just blast things out. And trying to put the, you know, trying to get those things together. University was, we were pretty, we were sort of like going with the flow, but the flow didn't always go was part of the problem. It was hard to recruit community members because people are very busy, and when you're a farm worker, you're very tired. It's difficult to come out for an evening meeting. We found that the only way we could get people to come was we had to pay their transportation, we had to pay for health, for child care, and we had to provide food. That did work, and people did come, but it was still difficult to recruit. We had a lot of changes in partner organizations, and the distance and time for the university faculty was quite substantial because we're in Seattle and Yakima's on the other side of the mountains. It took us about 3 hours to get there every time we went over, and so that was quite substantial. True farm worker participation, because of the difficulty of getting tired, busy farm workers to show up, was difficult. The ongoing communications, some of the CAB members at times indicated they thought we'd forgotten them, and part of that had to do with just the amount of time we had to be over there. Between funding activities was a particular challenge because to keep the CAB alive between projects was very challenging because we didn't have the money to do all those things that we said kept the CAB coming. The biggest thing that I think was the greatest challenge was the loss of the primary partner representatives as time went on. This project was started, do you remember when we started the funding on this? Seems like about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
About 8 years ago. Since that time, a lot of people have left. But we have been successful. We were accepted under the auspices of the 501c3 for the Northwest Community Education Center, which was a good thing. They didn't just kick us out when our funding ran out. And we've been successful in getting some other sources. And one of the things is I had an indirect cost account that I could put to the side and keep some of these activities going with money that had come out of the indirect cost. That doesn't happen in a lot of universities, but the University of Washington allowed that to happen. We are now, I'd say, a relatively small contractor to this whole process. The continued university support, I think, was helpful, but we continue to seek funding for these projects. The last thing I'd point out is that everyone you see in this room, which was the original partnership, and including myself, no longer works on the project. Effectively, everyone has left and been replaced by someone else. And so the history, the institutional memory is effectively gone. And that's had a great deal of organizational issues. Clear organizing issues included things like the challenge of proximity. We were very far away. We organized community groups and structure were necessary as far as I see sustainability. And let me go back for a moment. Sustainability, what I think we need for sustainability is what I'm trying to get at here. We need clear organizing issues. I think it's extremely helpful to have something you're going after and something you're challenging. Proximity is very helpful. This kind of distance travel is very challenging. Organized community group with structure is virtually essential. Committed partners is clearly a very important issue. And given the amount of funding that you can get on a project like this, the amount of time that you can give to it, I was a professor by the time I started this, or almost a professor. So I had enough research going on in other areas where I could take something like this on. Had I not been in that position academically, I just never would have undertaken something like this because I wouldn't have had the free time to do it. And then the other thing I think I've been a failure at is generativity. I really haven't brought someone in to replace me as I've gone. I've tried, but there hasn't been anybody that I've found that can do the kind of thing that I was doing and be able to spend the kind of time I was able to spend. Now, I would say that the clear organizing issue, NIEHS's approach to giving us the freedom to find the issue, we can really take that off the list. I think it's a very important aspect, but not an essential one. Proximity, I think we continue to do this despite a great deal of distance, but only because I had the time. So we have to leave one of those on the list. The rest, I think, stand as they are. And the generativity, I think, is critical. I'm gone now, and looking back, it's going to be very difficult, I think, to sustain this. I'm hoping it will. We have a couple grants that are going and young investigators that are involved, but their time is devoted to these projects, and their time to spend on general community organizing and the community involvement is very limited. Okay. Thank you.